Welcome. I'm very happy to be here again. I've been lecturing since many years, but it's always very happy to see new faces, new minds, and I always change in the program. So my name is François David, and David is my last name. And I'm from France. I'm a theoretical physicist in the Institut de Physique Théorique, the Theoretical Physics Institute in Saclay, south of Paris, and that's a much older institute than PHI. In fact, there was a feast last week, some celebration for its 60th birthday. But in size, number of permanent physicists, maybe it's a bit bigger, but it covers a wide scope of different subjects in theoretical physics, not exactly the same than here, but it's a somehow similar place, and it's also a lively place. But the buildings are older, therefore they are not as magnificent as here, and we don't have as many blackboards, which is the main, not the main, but the great aspects of the great advantage of the perimeter. And I've been working in quantum field theory, statistical physics, mathematical physics, and various aspects related to both high energy physics and condensed matter and statistical physics. So that's a bit of my broad. So I think you have more explanation on the page I wrote with Dan, and some explanations. There are details about how to contact me, also how to spell my name if you are interested in having the French, correct French, European French, and that Canadian French pronunciation. Okay, so as usual, I'm very bad at two things: remembering faces and remembering names. So please don't hesitate to remind me your names, who you are, where you came from, and especially, don't be shy and don't hesitate to ask questions or to come in my office and discuss with me. I'm here for the whole months, basically, months of the course, and have some free time. So I'm here for you. Okay. So now, let me just first present this the aim of these lectures, which is not very different from the lecture of QFT2 of the previous years. But I understand that you have had more than the students of the previous year, some introduction and presentation on some subject I'm going to cover. So the reason of this course, or at least that's what I've been asked for, is to introduce you or present in a more advanced form path integral and functional integral methods, first for quantum theory and quantum field theory. That's something that you are going to use in many areas of theoretical physics if you follow the next advanced course and in your career. That's the first point. The second point, which is connected to the first one, is renormalization theory and renormalization group theory. You have been introduced to this a bit in some last lecture, both in quantum theory and in quantum field theory 1, in framework of quantum electrodynamics and quantum Maxwell theory. I hope to present more advanced things which are needed. And the third point, which is connected to the third subject, is quantization of gauge theories, not only Maxwell theory that you have started to study in detail in QFT1, but of course non-abelian gauge theories, which are the building blocks with Higgs, the theory of the Higgs field of modern energy physics. But gauge theory appear, in fact, in many, many different areas of physics. They appear also in condensed matter and in some other area, a bit in disquish. Which means that gauge theory, gauge symmetry, are something very important in physics. So that's the three main subject that I'm going to treat, I hope. So today, so let me just write that so that we remember. First, going to the path and functional integral quantization. And in fact, I'm going to treat gauge theory before randomization group. So, gauge theories, especially from the point of view of functional integral quantization, which is the most easiest way to formulate and compute things. And finally, renormalization and renormalization group. Okay. So approximately, I have 14 lectures, and this will be approximately one third. We'll see how fast we advance, what you need. So don't hesitate if you think that I'm going too fast to ask questions. Okay, so today, so what is the plan of my lecture? So I have a tentative plan, but today, I'm going to start by some reminders of path integral and functional integral quantization that we have seen already. Path integral and functional integral quantization, but I'm going to present and discuss with you some more advanced aspects of it that you haven't seen. In particular, the connection between path integral method in quantum theory and in statistical physics. That's something that you are going to see in the next lecture, the lectures in statistical physics. It starts, or maybe it has started yesterday already.
No,
it starts today. Okay, so you'll see. And I try to coordinate with the lecturer. We already had some discussion because she's also going to discuss this aspect and renormalization group method for statistical physics and condensed matter. Okay, so today I'm going to discuss path and functional integral method and a bit of a connection with statistical mechanics. So, reminder. And please ask if you think that I'm assuming that you know something and you have not seen it. So, first, I've already took the wrong piece of paper. You have seen in quantum theory that one way to formulate quantum theory for non-relativistic as well as relativistic system is to use path integral quantization. So path integral quantization has been basically devised by Feynman in the end of the 40s, beginning of the 50s, based on some insight from Dirac in the 30s. But it's a formulation of quantum mechanics. It's not a new quantum mechanics. It's not a better quantum mechanics. It's a representation of the quantum formalism, which allows in sometimes to compute in an easier way. That was the original aim of Feynman, to compute easily things in quantum electrodynamics, which was just born and was very complicated based on some, at that time, heavy formalism, which has been used by many people and clarified and simplified later on by those same people. Path integral are good for computing things, but they are also one way to look at and to think at quantum physics and quantum theory. Because as you know, and it's still, there are still a lot of points which are poorly or which needs to be understood again at every time. Quantum theory is a counterintuitive theory by many aspects. But also, it's a very, very solid and logical quantum theory. So one needs different way to look at it, to think about it, and different tools to get a mental picture of what quantum theory is. And path integrals are one way to get a mental picture. It's good for some question about quantum theory. It's not good for some other one. So you must keep in mind that quantum theory, you must think about it in terms of path integral. You must think about it in terms of quantum states, wave vector, Hilbert space, which is how you really understand, for instance, entanglement, which is important in many aspects of physics and of quantum information theory. And there are others, more mathematical. Some mathematical physicists, some mathematical, think about what a quantum theory in terms of category theory, and some more involved mathematical tools, which are still not very well known by the average physicist. But some theoretical physicists here are very, very aware of that and are some of the experts of this. So you must keep in mind that you need different tools to think and work with quantum theory. Okay, so path integral. First, in non-relativistic quantum theory. Okay. As you know, as you have seen, if we take, for instance, the simple example of a particle on a line, so we have a one-dimensional space, and you have a particle which moves, so you have its position is labeled by some position number q. Let's take that's a one-dimensional space. And if it's in the potential, this particle has a mass m, it lives in local potential v, which depends on the position. Classical physics for this particle is basically the Newton equation of motion can be formulated by Newton's law by stating that there's a force which is minus the derivative of the potential. But it can be derived also in terms of Lagrangian mechanics. So you have a Lagrangian, L, which is associated to a trajectory of the particle. So you have your time. Here I have Q. And to each trajectory history of the particles is associated with a Lagrangian, which is the integral over time from the initial time, let's call t1 to t2. If it starts from t1 here, it ends up in t2, of the kinetic energy minus the potential energy. That's the outcome of the theory. So you have kinetic energy is m over 2 dq over dt squared. The particle is neutral. There are no electromagnetic force. Otherwise, it's a bit more complicated. Minus the potential energy v of q. OK, so as you associate, oh, I'm sorry. So this is the Lagrangian. This is the Lagrangian. And this is the action, S or A. I don't remember how I call it action of the trajectory. So that's for classical mechanics. And you know from Feynman that if now we are interested in what is the quantum amplitudes, not probability, but amplitude, quantum amplitudes, to propagate at time t1, if you are at the position q1, And you want to at time t2 to be at position q2. Then the rules of quantum mechanics mean that this quantum amplitude is in a Schrödinger formalism. It's just you take as an initial state, as a ket for your theory q1, the wave function, you know, which is a delta function at q1. So that's an eigenstate of the position operator. You want to end up to compute the quantum amplitude. So this is just a scalar product of wave functions between the initial and the final states. And in between, of course, your quantum states here much evolves with time according to the action here. Therefore, you have the evolution operator u of t2 minus t1. So that's the evolution operator. This is the initial states, okay. This is the final states, and you take the scalar product, so this is a bra. Okay, so this is the initial state. This is final state. And this is given, this is the definition of path integral, by in fact, an integral, so a mathematical sum over the space of all possible trajectory, histories of the particles. So this is something that I'm going to denote d of q. This is a functional integral over positions. So this number, this letter here, doesn't involve the position of the particles, but it denotes all the value with time. So this q here is just the set of q of s for s between t1 and t2. So we integrate over all the q, and you have exponential of I divided by Planck's constant. That's where quantum theory appears, of the action of this classical trajectory. And of course, if we are interested in computing this particular matrix element, this initial and final state are determined, are fixed by the initial and final condition for your. So you impose at q at t1 is q1, and at q at t2 equal t2. So in fact, you are computing, you know, and making some kind of quantum average between the position of all the histories of the particle. So this is a particle. This one is supposed to be green. Well, the green is almost like the white, but this one. Okay. And you see that to each trajectory is associated a phase. So this is a phase. This is exponential of I is a quantum phase. So making a sum of a trajectory and where the weight is a complex number, it means that you are computing, in fact, quantum interferences between. So you have quantum interferences. Okay. So that's the basic idea of quantum. Okay. So, I think you have seen in quantum theory that basically one recovers classical mechanics, so classical physics is recovered by letting Planck's constant to zero, it's a mathematical limit, but in fact, you can see that it corresponds to, if you study some physical system and you say, oh, these systems, you know, should behave like the classical system, it amounts to when re-expressing everything in terms of natural unit of systems, units of time, units of space, units of energy for the systems, then in this system of unique, Planck constant is very small. In our metric systems, Planck's constant is a very small number because our metric system of unique for masses, for space, for time, for energy, is devised for ordinary works. It's divided for us. The unit of length, this is basically the unit of length of some human being or of some speed that we can walk for during 1 hour. The same for the energy, the same for time. And we know that in our system, quantum effects are almost invisible or hidden, there, but hidden. So classical physics is h bar goes to zero, and when you want to study mathematically what's happening in this path integral, one sees that in fact the typical trajectory where interference between phases do not wash out the quantum amplitudes are no, so you have some typical trajectory, which are the extrema of the action. So the interference effects disappear when the action for a trajectory is extremum, is an extremum of S. The classical physics emerge as the points where the variation of the action are minimal when you change the theory. So this is the quantum origin of the least action principle. Okay. So this is for non-relativistic quantum theory. And you have seen that now, if you go to relativistic physics, you have seen in quantum, both in quantum theory and in quantum field theory one, that in fact, it doesn't make sense to think of the physics only in terms of particles, because the number of particles is not fixed. So the correct object to describe quantum field theory are quantum fields. So quantum fields are both classical fields and classical particles. And depending on the regime you study, they appear more like particle. That's, for instance, the case of the Dirac field for low energy Dirac fermions, electrons, charged particles. Or they appear like fields. That's, of course, the case of the Maxwell theory, where for most aspects of electromagnetism, you must think in terms of electric and magnetic field or potential vector potential. And it's only when you go to the quantum that you discover that, in fact, there are particles, there are quanta of the fields, which are photons. Okay, so quantum fields are now, in fact, the quantum version of classical fields. They are both the quantum version of classical particles and the quantum version of classical fields. And in terms of, but there is a method to quantize fields by path integral method. It's called the functional integral methods. You have seen that, I think, in the previous course, get some flavor of it and started to compute with it. And the basic idea, if we consider, for instance, the scalar fields, the Klein Gordon, which is a field we describe a massive, well, mass is not very important, but mass, massive or massless, spin zero, that's why it is scalar, and neutral particle. There are no electromagnetism, but you can also compute it. Basically, the Klein-Gordon field is a scalar field, so it's a function phi, which depends both on time and x, time and space, which is scalar, namely it's a real field. Okay. And to build a quantum theory of the scalar field, it goes very crudely along the same line. But now you have what is called the functional integral. So the functional integral can be written in the same way. It's a much bigger integral over histories of the field depending on x in terms of time. So it's an integral over a field phi of t and x with an exponential factor of I over Planck's constant times the action of a field history. So what is the action? In this case, the action S of phi is the integral over time of the kinetic plus minus the potential energy. But this is a field, so it extends over space-time. So you have you integrate over space. And the kinetic energy is basically one half of d phi over dt squared. And the potential energy, as if I'm considering a free field, it's going to be m squared over 2 phi squared. This is a kind of potential energy. But there is also a term in the potential energy which depends on the spatial derivative of the field. So it's one half of the derivative, well, the gradient, so the derivative of phi with respect to x squared. So this is a vector, this is a gradient, and I take the square, so minus. So this is a, in fact, this minus is minus this plus this. This is a potential energy. This is a kinetic energy. And this measure d phi of t and x is, roughly speaking, you have to work more carefully to define this precisely, but it's basically a product over all times. This is an infinite product, but you can discretize space and time. A product over position in space, and then the ordinary measure of phi of x at each point. So this is this requires more mathematical, you know, care, but basically the measure. And now, finally, of course, if you want to compute, in fact, quantum amplitude. So in fact, what you are computing when using the sparse integral method is the probability amplitude, the quantum probability amplitudes for a field to evolve from an initial state in space at a given time to a final state of the field at another time in the whole space. So basically, in fact, what you are doing is that you have some this is space at one given time. This is x1, This is space at a finite time, T2. This is space-time. I don't specify what are the boundary conditions. This can be infinity plus infinity. Space can be, of course, d-dimensional. So this is d-dimension. And basically, you fix the field phi 1. What the value of the field is, it can be basically any function. So that phi 1 of x here, you have phi 2 of x initial state. So this is basically phi initial. This is phi final, or phi initial state, final states. And you integrate over all the histories of the field everywhere. You see? So it's a much bigger functional integral. But the quantum amplitude is given by the exponential of an action, which is now an integral both over time and over space. And the initial and final states are somehow in correspondence, in bijection, in correspondence with the value of the field, which is a classical field now at the first time. So it's still a functional, but it's still a function, but it's a function of space only. And the same for a final state. So basically, the boundary condition again in this big functional integral, but you have a boundary condition both in time and space, you correspond to initial and final quantum states. The same picture, much bigger, a much bigger functional space, but that's the idea. Okay. So this is the action for the free field. And of course, if you consider a field in interaction, and you have seen that, you replace this by, for instance, if you want to have an interactions, you replace m squared over 2 phi squared by m squared over 2 phi squared plus, for instance, a term of interaction like phi 4 with some charge. Well, let me factor 4. So this is going to describe, and so this describes the propagation of Klein-Gordon particles because it's a 2 with mass m. So this describes mass m of Klein-Gordon particles. And these phi 4 terms, if you start to play the game of Feynman amplitudes, describes a 2 body, 2 particles, let's say, local interaction between particles. And I think you have started to see what are the Feynman diagrammatic rules coming from mostly canonical quantization, coming from this. Okay. Okay, so this is supposed to be reminders of what you have seen, but please ask question.
So how can I assign states to fields? I was thinking that in the Hilbert space picture, like fields are like operators or something.
So you want to assign states to?
So somehow we write like phi initial, phi final, but yes. Phi is a field, so I'm a bit confused because I thought that field is an operator. So do I assign state to an operator?
Yeah, but in canonical quantization, and also here, you can define fields which are local operators. But I think I'm going to get that. One uses the same name for different objects. You can have local operators in a quantum theory, and you can have non-local operators. You see, in some sense, in the same way that in quantum theory, if you have several particles, you can have operators which correspond to acting on the state of a single particles or operator acting to the states of different particles. And an operator which creates an entangled states out of a bipartite states for particles, the kind of operators which are called gates in quantum information, are in some sense non-local. That is somehow the same here, but we'll come back to that. Okay, so now how's it manual? Let's go to something which I think you have, which might be a bit new for you, which is a connection when you are doing with sparse integral matter, when you are doing quantum theory and thermodynamics. So you want to introduce the quantum theory plus thermodynamics and separate, consider for instance the kind here where we have just a single particle in a potential, but you assume that this single particle is in contact with the thermostat. So you have, I have my particles here in my potential V of Q. I have a single quantum particles, but these particles may exchange in an unspecified way, but not too wild and somehow classical, with a big reservoir, a thermostat. With temperature T. Here T is the temperature, capital T is temperature. Okay. Now the rules of quantum statistical mechanics state that since the particles interact with temperature, it may be in different states, and in fact it's entangled with the thermostat. But if you are interested just in the states of the quantum particles, forgetting what the detail of what the thermostat is, you just know that it has some temperature, you know that the particle is not in a pure state. Okay? Particle is not in a pure state, but it is in a mixed state. It is described by a density matrix. Okay. And the rules of thermodynamics tells you basically that if these particles, for instance, is in states with some energy levels. So classically, the quantum particle, if it's isolated, is in, you have states I with energy EI. E0 is a ground state. So E0 less than E1, less than E2, etc. To simplify, we consider that it's a confining potential, so all the energy eigenstates are separated. And in addition, you have no continuum, but this can be extended. Then you know that the probability to find the particles is given by a density matrix. And the density matrix, rho, is just the probability to have a particle, the classical probability to have particles to have in state I is given by the Gibbs states. So the density matrix is given basically by the sum over the states. And it has a simple form in the energy, in the basis of energy eigenstates. It's a matrix, so it's products of ket by bra instead of bra by kets, because it's a matrix. So you have the probability to be in the set I times the projecting operator on the states of I, this is a projection operator, and you know that the probability, now this is a thermal probability we are doing. It's just given, it's proportional to exponential minus beta, the energy, where Gibbs states is 1 over Boltzmann constant times the temperature. So this is the Gibbs. That you learn in classical thermodynamics and classical statistical theory. And of course, it has to be normalized by some number Z, where Z is just the sum of the probabilities of P or I. Therefore, it is given by the trace of this density matrix, and it's called the partition function. Okay. And of course, you can rewrite the density matrix rho. It's an operator matrix equal an operator. It's 1 over z times, if you write this as a, you write this term as a diagonal operator, but it's exponential minus beta h, where h is a Hamiltonian operator. And therefore, this is sum over I of EI, II. This is the general form of the Hamiltonian. And this is the Hamiltonian in the basis of eigenstates, where it's diagonalized. And so you have this operator, and Z is just, oh no, I'm sorry, Z is not the trace of H. I made a very stupid mistake. It's a sum, so it's not trace of rho, but Z is a trace of E minus beta H. And since P is the Rondeau matrix is 1 over Z times this, the trace of rho is 1. The sum of probabilities, either quantum or classical, has to be equal to 1. That's one of the axioms of probability theory. Okay. So now you have this operator, E minus beta H, and formally this operator looks very much like the evolution operator, because if you consider the evolution operator, now I forget about the thermistor, I consider just the particle. The evolution operator U of T for a quantum particles is just exponential of I over h bar, no, it's 1 over h bar I, h bar over I times h. Is it h or 1 over h? Certainly I have a, I should know this by heart, and I do know this by heart, but, no, it's, I'm sorry, this, no, I'm sorry, there is no h bar, it's time. The evolution operator, h bar is hidden in the Hamiltonian. So the evolution operator of a quantum particle is exponential of t, the time, divided by h by I of h. The same Hamiltonian, you see. And since there is a t over h, this is a unitary operator. While of course this operator is not unitary, but it's self-adjoint, it's Hermitian. Because H is equal to H dagger. H is an Hermitian operator, so this is a function of an Hermitian operator with beta real, so it's Hermitian. While this is a unitary operator. Also because H is Hermitian. Okay. And here I'm considering not quantum theory with non-Hermitian operator. This is useful for some problem of physics. It's also very interesting, but of course here I'm just in standard quantum mechanics. So before, I think we are supposed to make a short break. So before making a short break, let me just finish this part of the argument by stating that basically the difference between U of t and E minus beta h is that you replace t over I by minus beta I. So you can write this unnormalized Gibbs operator, if you want, density operator, but not divided by Z. You can write that E minus beta h as the unitary operator, but for a time t, where t is t over I is minus beta h, for t is minus I beta. Oh, and there is an h, of course, there is an h. Yes, there is an h bar. Okay, so the density matrix operator is just the evolution operator, but when you consider that time is imaginary. So you can write this, that time, you can write it as minus I times some tau, where tau is real. And tau is called the Euclidean time. And I'm going to explain that after the break. So you see that the relation between time and Euclidean time is this relation. So tau is beta h bar, so it's h bar over kb times t. And you see that basically, if you consider that the evolution operator is a function of time, of real time, the evolution operator is, of course, defined for physical time variable t, real and positive or negative. In this line, if you consider that time instead of being a real variable can be considered mathematically, here it's just as a complex variable, then here Euclidean times lives on the negative imaginary time. Here, so this is, if t was here, tau minus I tau is here. So this, if you want, thermodynamical tau lies on the imaginary axis. This is the origin. Okay. And if you are able to compute all the matrix elements of the evolution operator, U of t, you get the matrix element of the density matrix by just making an analytic continuation from the real axis to the imaginary axis. which is just a simple rotation. Minus pi, minus pi over 2, if you start from positive time. Okay. So this rotation, in fact, is called Wieck rotation. Because it plays an important role in quantum theory. Wieck is the name of the physicist, the same than the Wieck formula in quantum theory. Okay, same Wieck. Okay. So, after a Wieck rotation, doing thermodynamics of a quantum object is the same thing as studying the time, physical time, evolution in physical time of the particle, the quantum system. Okay, so let's make a short break, 5 minutes. And out of this simple, I'll show you how one can define what is called Euclidean quantum field theory and consider this on a similar footing at real-time quantum field theory. And I'll explain why this is called Euclidean. What does it have to do with geometry, the famous Greek mathematician called Euclides? Okay, so let's make a break and be back in 5 minutes. Yes?
When you mentioned that the classical limit is
yes,
and has the extreme and maximum.
Yes.
So how do you see that clearly? Because this is a fail.
Yes.
So if it were, for example, if the I wanted, then you could say that it's sort of a weight factor and hence this needs to be extremized. But
yes,
since this is here, I'm not able to see how extremizing this.
You have to extremize. This is, in fact, this extremization corresponds to what is called in classical physics the shortest. You have to extremize a phase.
Right. Okay.
And it's something which occurs only when you just study wave equation in classical physics.
I see. Okay.
As well, electromagnetism, as well as, for instance, hydrodynamics.
Hydrodynamics.
Or it's called the.
Okay.
And I think it's explained in the note that I'm going to give you, or in the previous note. But basically, you see, think about what is the Gaussian integration.
Right.
Gaussian integration. But think about the Gaussian integration where the weight is imaginary. So basically, you are interested in integrating for something that I'm calling Q, goes from minus infinity to plus infinity, exponential I over h bar Q squared divided by 2, for instance. Okay, so that's the analog of integral from minus infinity to plus infinity dot dQ exponential minus, here it's going to be, should be beta, minus beta Q squared over 2. Which is a real Gaussian. So a real Gaussian, you know that what it is. It's a function which is like that, with a width which is proportional to 1 over square root of beta. And therefore, when beta goes to infinity, what counts is the maximum. Okay. In this case, this is a phase. So if now I'm thinking in terms of Q, think about, of course, it's a complex number, so think about the real part. Let me write the real part in blue. The real part of Q, of the real part of this, it's something which is oscillates. And if Q is large, it oscillates very quickly. It's something which oscillates very quickly. But when you approach to zero, this vary less, and the phase is stationary here. The same at zero here. The phase is stationary. And then it starts to oscillate. And the same for the imaginary part. The imaginary part is just like that. Okay. So you see that here, the phase is stationary. Okay. So here you have a saddle point. Here you have a phase, a point where the phase is stationary. But now if you think about, so you see that here basically the interference effects wash out very quickly. So of course, if you think of this as a function, it's a function which is always of norm one, and it becomes wilder and wilder the further you go towards infinity. But if you think in terms of what is called a distribution, I don't know if you have seen the theory of distribution, it's a mathematical theory. Exactly. In some sense here, it looks like a sum of Dirac functions, very close together, while here it behaves like a function. And as soon as you take a test function, which is smooth, compute this and average this over a test function, psi of q, which is a smooth test function. Smooth for mathematician means that the function is continuous, it's infinitely continuous, all its derivatives are continuous and they are bounded in some way so that it's either compact support or what. If you apply this to a smooth test function, you average by the test function, and when you are far away, the average of the very fast oscillation is zero. So it is this domain. Okay. So there is a theory of stationary phase approximation, which is very well defined mathematically. It has been defined in the 19th century, and there are still, for more complicated integral, it's still a very active field in mathematics.
Stationary phase.
Which corresponds to this, as you say. Okay, let me drink a bit and let me start again.
You can speak French.
Okay, so why is it called Euclidean? Here. Now, let's consider the scalar field theory. Oh, this one, for instance, the free field. And let's consider the thermodynamics of free field. So we consider a free field in equilibrium with a big thermostat, so that we consider what is its state at finite temperature. Okay? Then it's something which makes sense in something which is studied in physics. For instance, in the theory of the Big Bang, the universe was very dense, very hot, and studying the initial states of the Big Bang involves doing quantum field theory in a very hot environment. The universe is very hot. Another field, which is what high-energy physicists study, the confined and deconfined phase by heavy ion collision. When you have two ion, heavy ion like lead or iron or whatever, or gold and a collision, when two nuclei collide, they make a very hot state of matter, which is a quark gluon plasma if you go to high energy enough, and it's very hot. And the way this quantum state of matter behaves and how, especially after that, it cools down by emitting a lot of particles which became mesons, involves the theory of quantum field theory at finite temperature. So now, quantum field theory, I want to do quantum field theory at temperature. But you can do also the same game for this. So think about what's happened when you take the time, the ordinary physical time in a quantum field theory, and you make it complex. Okay, so you start from your path integral, which is exponential of I over h bar, integral over dt, integral over d dx, 1/2 of d phi over dt square, minus 1/2 of, I write this d f over dx squared. Well, let's assume that the mass, the field is massless. Okay. And let's consider now what happened if I make this weak rotation. I replace t by minus I tau. When tau now is a real coordinate of time, but of Euclidean time. Okay, then, of course, dt becomes minus I d tau. So I get minus I d tau. This is unchanged, but this is d phi over d minus I d tau. So this becomes minus 1/2 d phi over d tau squared. Okay? So you get here a minus sign, the same than here. The integral becomes a minus I, so you have minus, minus, which is a p, but you have I time. So by doing this manipulation, this quantum phase becomes exactly like here. It becomes exponential minus 1 over h bar integral over d tau integral over dx. And now the minus here and here is here. So it's 1/2 d phi over d tau squared plus 1/2 of d phi over dx squared. Okay, you can do the same trick by considering just a single particle where you have only time and no space. Okay, so now you see. Like here, the phase factor EI over H bar becomes a minus time, and this becomes a quantum field theory where phi is a function of one imaginary time coordinate tau and x. So now both are real variables. Real variables, you see? And this is just the, you can rewrite this, of course. You can consider that tau and x are just some space-time coordinate of a big vector. Here I have that one time and d space, and here I have a 1 plus d dimensional vector. But this is just, you know, the ordinary sum of the scalar products. You have 1 over d phi over dt squared plus 1 over half d phi. So you can rewrite this as 1 half d phi over each coordinate of the big vector x squared. In other words, this field lives in a space-time. If you write this, consider that the force coordinate is time and this, but the signature of space-time, the signature of space-time is plus, 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 if you were in 1 plus 3 dimension space-time. Instead of engineering time, minus, plus, plus, plus. So changing the signature of the time component of space-time becomes this. So this is ordinary Minkowski space-time. And this is just the signature of the metric of ordinary Euclidean space. So this is. Time is just another coordinate of space once you make the decrotation. So this describes Minkowski space-time. This describes Euclidean space-time. Hence the name Euclidean quantum field theory. Okay. And now there is also another miracle which is a bit important. Now think about, you want to compute the partition function of a quantum system, typically a quantum field theory. I want to compute the partition function.
Oh. Professor?
Yes?
So in real-time one, the time integral is along the real axis, and in Euclidean, it's along the imaginary axis.
Yes, but then you have to specify what you compute and what you, at the moment I wrote just a formal functional integral, but I didn't say where I integrate over which field configuration, in particular, what are the boundary conditions. And this requires some square, but I'm going to discuss this just now as an example. So you consider, start from the, well, okay, rather than quantum field theory, let us consider, well, the ordinary pure non-relativistic system. It's going to be the same afterwards for quantum field theory. So I have this quantum system, and I want to compute the partition function. The partition function is just the sum over all states of my systems of, it's a tree. It's the sum over all systems It's the sum over, it's a trace of E minus beta times the Hamiltonian. So here I wrote the trace in the simplest way because I know how to diagonalize. But you can write the trace either as sum over I of I E minus beta H I, that's usually what it done. But since I have a system of particle in a potential, I can consider the trace in momentum, in position space, spaces. So the trace is also equal to integral over the position of the particles of q e minus beta h q. I integrate from minus infinity plus infinity if my particle is on an infinite line. Okay, that's a simple case. Now you may consider what is Q final E minus beta H Q initial. And use the path integral representation for this. Well, path integral, you just do the trick of changing time in EI times Euclidean time in the path integral. So assume that this can be done, but mathematically this makes sense. This is just going to be a path integral over the sum of the q of, let's call tau, you see? But I integrate now exponential minus 1 over h bar integral from 0 to beta, because beta is an analog of the t over h bar. Oh, there was a t over h bar, so it's beta over h bar, yes, of d tau now. Well, here it's m squared over 2 dq over d tau squared plus v of q of tau, just by this trick. So now we consider a path integral here where my time is Euclidean. It goes from 0 to beta, and I'm integrating over histories where, which goes from q initial to q final. But instead of having a phase factor, I have this weight which assigns a probability weight factor to trajectories. So this is a probability weight factor. It's called the probability weight factor because it's a number and it's always positive. It's just not normalized to 1 at the end, because that's what the partition function we want to compute will define. So it's, we assign a probability weight factor to each trajectory in Euclidean time. This is just a mathematical object. Okay, but now we are interested in computing the partition function. So we want to compute the matrix element of this Hermitian operator given by this Euclidean time functional integral. First, when the initial position and the position, final position are the same. So q initial equal q final equal q, same initial and final position. But in addition, we integrate over q because we take the trace. Over q. So in other words, the functional integral we have to compute, we have to estimate when we compute the partition function, we sum over all the trajectory in Euclidean time, which are periodic, and we integrate over the position, initial and final position. Therefore, there can be anything. So basically, Z is just an Euclidean functional integral with exponential minus 1 over h bar times this quantity that I can call the Euclidean action. This is going to be what I call the Euclidean action. Here the Euclidean action is this, for this trajectory. Okay, and I integrate just over periodic trajectories. So not only time now is not the physical real time, but is considered as an imaginary variable, therefore its imaginary part is called Euclidean time, but in addition, this Euclidean time is periodic. It's just a mathematical property, so Q of 0 equal Q of tau. So finite temperature quantum theory can be described just as a path or functional integral in periodic Euclidean time. So it seems some kind of mathematical miracle, but it's just a mathematical identity. And the final relation between what is a period, I think I might have mixed up some h-bar factor in this derivation, since I was going a bit too fast. So exercise, work out the h-bar factor and show that at the end of the game, the relation between the period in Euclidean time, let's call it P, it corresponds to this tau here, the relation between the period in Euclidean time, PE, and the temperature is h bar over Boltzmann's constant times the temperature of the quantum system. So the period in Euclidean time of this quantum theory at Euclidean quantum physics theory, which describes the physics of the quantum system at finite temperature, is related to h bar, the temperature, by this relation, but where this is just the Boltzmann constant. Which is just defines the natural unit of temperature when you think of the temperature in terms of entropy. Okay, so it's a normalization of the temperature. So this is a fundamental relation. And you see out of that many interesting things. You see that letting h bar goes to zero is equivalent to take the temperature to infinity. Letting the temperature goes to zero is equivalent to take the period in Euclidean time to infinity. So for instance, letting the temperature going to zero means beta goes to infinity here. Therefore, the most important term here in this exponential minus beta the energy is just the ground state. So for instance, the consequence, if you are interested in a quantum system and you want to compute the matrix element of the ground state of the vacuum energy, so if you consider the vacuum state, I'm sorry, yeah, never vacuum state of a quantum field theory, and forget about the role of the excited state in some quantum amplitude, and that's typically what you do when you use LSZ formula to compute S matrix element transition amplitudes. Projecting on the vacuum is related to consider a quantum field theory in Euclidean time and let the period, Euclidean period, goes to infinity. You can do a lot of interesting things using this analogy. Okay. And if you want to consider a quantum field system, a quantum field theory at finite temperature, you have to quantize it by using this periodic Euclidean time. So, I still have 10 minutes. So, I will end up, in fact, with some opening. It's still going to be just a simple presentation, but what happens if you want to compute real-time correlation function of operator of a quantum field theory at finite temperature? So first, what happens if instead of wanting to compute in a quantum theory a matrix element of the evolution operator, you want to compute the expectation value in the ground state of some operator, local operator in the field. For instance, if you want to compute in a quantum field theory with a scalar field with a scalar field phi, and you want to compute the expectation value in the ground state of your theory of the field operator phi. So I consider the field operator at time t at position, that's a local field operator that you have defined in canonical quantization for the, at least the local free field, phi what of t1 x1, for instance, t2 x2, etc. I'm sorry, I'm using this is space, this is time. So I put a vector, etc. in a matrix element. So this is a local field operator. If you want to compute this in by a path integral method, first you have to remember that what is interesting in physics and what you are able to compute is the time ordered products of this operator. Okay, and time ordering means that you put to the right, you apply to your initial states operator order according to the time. So for instance, this time ordering of these two operators is going to be phi of t1 times phi of t2, where this is the initial state and that's the final state. So this is going to be phi of t1, phi of t2, if t2 is less than t1. This is just phi of t1 x1 in this case, times phi of t2 x2. Okay. Now, you have to remember that in quantum field theory, this is a local operator in space. As I mentioned, there are operators which are non-local in space. These are local operators in space, and they are localized at a given point of time. This means that we are working in the Heisenberg representation. So you see, you know that if you have an operator A, which in the Schrödinger representation is just an operator A, Schrödinger picture, it's a Heisenberg picture. You consider the operator A applied to a state which evolves up to time t. This is just u of t A times u of minus t. This is a way to, in the Heisenberg picture, to represent an operator A. So if you are interested in computing a matrix element of the products of operator, if you consider phi of t1, for instance, phi of t2, applied to some initial operator in path integral formulation, you start from your initial states. This is time. You start from an initial state. You let it evolve until time t2, because t2 is less. I'm sorry, t2 is less than t1. You apply your operator phi. You apply phi. Then you let it evolve to t1. You apply another operator phi, and you let it evolve to your final states. So in path integral, this is going to be represented by, if there is time ordering, by some path integral over d of phi. This is a big functional integral over b of phi. Exponential I over h bar, the action. But in the action, I represent first the initial the evolution operator u up to time t2 by a path integral. Then I compute the matrix element of phi at time t2 between the states which it evolves. So I represent a phi of t2 x2. Then I let it evolve up to time t1. Then I apply the operator, which means that I represent the operator by multiplying the phase factor by phi of t1 x1. This is just correspondence principle. You can check. And then I let it evolve. Okay. So this is the path of the path integral, the functional integral, when we want to compute something like that. Okay. So here see again, I'm computing some initials. I'm computing this, the matrix element between an initial state and the final state. Okay. So this is, I have some initial and final condition. Now, if you want to compute the vacuum to vacuum matrix element of this object, you first have to compute a path integral, ordinary path integral, in time, starting from some initial states, to time t2, then to time t1, and here you apply your operator phi, you apply your operator phi. Schematic way, and of course, it evolves in time. Thank you. Okay, so you compute a path integral where time evolves there. But here you have a final state. If you want to compute a matrix element between initial and final state, which are the same, you have to move back your state in time so that you can compare the scalar products of phi with phi itself. So you have to let the states evolve in the reverse time. So it's just equivalent to say that if you want to compute, apply some operator in Schrödinger picture at a given time, first you let the path integrals define, compute the evolution of the system up to time t, then you apply the time t, then t2, and then you go back to your initial time by building a path integral from time t to time 0, which means you compute a path integral, but simply your integral from 0 to t goes, instead of going from 0 to some positive time, goes from some positive time to 0. And mathematically, this is well defined. So your time go back here in time up to your initial time. And now, if you want to project your operator on the vacuum, You don't take a thermal state here, but you go, well, you have to compute a path integral at Euclidean time and let the period going to infinity. So you have to just to, you know, concatenate path integrals, where for part of the path integrals, time is real and positive. Then you concatenate to this a path integral where time goes from a positive time to zero. And then to finish the job and to project out of the vacuum, you have to concatenate with this with a path integral where now this is real time. This is Euclidean time. So now you work in a space where time is a complex variable. It can be real, it can be imaginary. And you compute a path integral from 0 to minus I, the period. Then you go back to the original time, since it's periodic. And then you take the limit goes to infinity. So computing vacuum to vacuum matrix element of time ordered products of operator can be done by a functional integral where you have combined all the elements that I described in this lecture. Path integral in physical time and path integral in Euclidean time. You see? And otherwise, so I can represent this. You have a path integral where first you integrate from time t2 to time t1 with positive time. Then time is real but negative. But you cannot go back in time in Euclidean time. You can go in this direction, so you have to be a bit above. So you choose this contour of integration, this contour of integration, a bit short, and then you take periodic time. So the path integral which describes an object like that is described by a path integral where time first is real and goes in the positive direction, then time is real but goes in the opposite direction, and then you take it imaginary. So this complex time formalism that is often called the two times formalism, because if you don't want to be on the ground state but just have some initial states here and see how it evolves, you just have to do this and compare to this. In fact, is just a way to see in the path integral formulation something which is well known both in quantum field theory and in condensed matter, which is called the Schwinger-Keldysh formalism. And this Schwinger-Keldysh formalism is something which is one of the basis of out of equilibrium quantum statistical mechanics. And you are going to meet the Schwinger-Keldysh formalism both in high energy physics and in condensed matter, quantum . So I've been a bit sketchy, so don't ask me questions if you want more explanation. This is detailed in a more detailed way written in my lecture notes. But you see that path integral and functional integral, both at real time and at Euclidean time, provides a very convenient framework to think about quantum physics and to compute things. So, up to now, I have not computed anything. I just gave the rules, the rule of the game, but I didn't show you how you compute those path integral. You have started to see how you compute those path integral and functional integral, but of course, I will present in the next lecture some more explicit calculation. But I wanted to have this general introduction. And and finally, in fact, what is the why did I say that there was a connection with statistical mechanics? That's because this functional integral here at in Euclidean space-time, you can just think of it as just a problem of statistical mechanics. You view h-bar as 1 over kbt. You view this as a Boltzmann weight associated to a field configuration which lives now in one Euclidean time and d-dimensional space. So this is useful to do statistical mechanics. So, and I'll come back later on that, and you'll see that too in the statistical mechanics course just now. Okay, I stop there because I'm already 5 minutes too late. Thank you.